Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
ここいるんだ。本当？見えないでしょ。どこにいるのかな。見えない。
こんなところ
。
あ、こんなところ。
I miss you. What's good, internet? It is January 20th, 2017. It is Austin Walker coming to you, not live, not honestly, with a lot of energy.
Not really life.
No, there's nothing good. What's good, internet? What's bad, internet?
Well, lots is bad. I mean, you have to remember that, like, what's good? So there's actually two what's goods, right? There's, like, you see someone on the street that you haven't seen in a while, like, oh, man, what's good? Like, what's going on? Mm-hmm. The other one is when someone does you wrong and you look at them from across the way and you go, what's good? What's good, Donald Trump? No, what's really good, Donald Trump?
I feel like you did that to Jaden Smith this morning.
Can I tell you the truth?
I didn't know that was
Jaden Smith. So I woke up First of all, Patrick Klepek, Daniel Rando, thank you for joining me as always on Waypoint Radio. Thank you for listening to us today on this historic day. I woke up this morning and took a look on the internet, on Twitter. I was like, oh, what's going on today? Is there any news? What's good today? And saw a news story over on Vulture about the new Shia LaBeouf project,
which
called He Will Not Divide Us, in which he set up a camera and a microphone outside of the Museum of the Moving Image in Astoria, Queens, where people could go and speak into the camera and microphone, and that is that's within walking distance of me. It's near a Starbucks that I've done lots of work at in the past year or two. And I had to go get coffee this morning. So I was walking by and I was like, man, I'm just going to say some shit real quick. because like that project is like an interesting project. Also, I have issues with it, which you can hear about in the video of me stepping in front of Jane Smith and basically grabbing the mic and then just saying some shit.
He will not divide us. You guys mind if I say something? So I kind of reject the notion that he will not divide us because we're already divided. I think that there is like this wide notion that democracy is built on consensus. And I don't necessarily think that might be true right this second, that democracy is built on consensus right now, and that's a problem. It ought to be built on dissensus. It should be built on a rejection of the notion that there is a single common frame, that there is one way of looking at the world that dominates, that everything else has to fall under. Democracy at its best recognizes that we are already divided and confronts that division intellectually and critically. And materially also, not just like people talking in a building somewhere or at a camera here in Astoria, but like also with changes in policy and practice. And so instead, for the next 4 years of just leaning into a rhetoric of unification, I hope that we instead look for some sort of practice that engages with the real differences that Americans face, and that from there, moves not just to stitch up that division, but to recognize the places in which the larger frame encourages it. And then from there, I don't know, maybe we do some cool shit. I'm Austin Walker. Have a good one.
But I didn't know it was Jaden Smith. And then, like, afterwards, I went home, and people were like, you just ran up on Jaden Smith. And I was like, oh shit, that's Jaden Smith. Okay. And it was. I didn't recognize him.
Oops. You said something like he's shorter in person. That's why you didn't recognize.
I can't just put he's shorter. He has a big personality. And so
sure.
I assume
most celebrities are like
Right.
Not what you necessarily expect when you, you know, when you see them in person. That's always, like, somebody's shorter, somebody's taller.
And I'm not that tall. Like, I'm 6 foot even, right? So I expect he'd be, like, 5'11 or 6 foot even or something. But it definitely felt young. He felt smaller than that, which is not a diss. My stepdad, who I love dearly, is, like, 5'6", 5'8", something like that. It's cool to be a short dude.
Some of us are short. No, you know?
Some people are short. It just, that's bodies. Bodies, you know?
Bodies are bodies.
But it's not where I thought I'd be this morning, so... and then I watched the inauguration. How about you?
I stayed away from it. So, Patrick, I see you taking a sip of coffee over there. You know, I know it's not good for radio, hey, is there anything in that coffee?
There's nothing in this coffee. I allowed myself to... Look, man, I had one beer during the inauguration, but if you have more than one beer, then you're just going down the path. And Comrade Trump may be president now, but I am still a parent, and so...
Yeah.
I was like, I'm gonna give it a little time. Yeah, I did watch it. I don't blame anyone for their own coping mechanisms, their own ways of dealing with what's happening. But it was important for me to bear witness, to understand, and to see it happen. And so that's why I watched it.
Yeah, there's an opportunity at any inauguration to lay out a plan, but also to lay out a tone about like what your not just your specific policy priorities are, but like. What's the picture of America that you want to put on the postcard that gets sent to every American and to everyone in the world? And it was very interesting to see him just, like, return to the campaign playbook of just, like, oh, like, this is the shit you got elected on from this very narrow base that's, like, not that narrow, from this very large base, but not a majority. And I don't know what I expected, but... I expected him to like gesture at playing ball, right? To at least like put on that hat for the day.
Yeah, just lie to us. Just say, right. Hey, man, I want to be your president too, and I can go. No, you don't. But I guess I appreciate the gesture, right. Which is like half of politics is like a meaningless gesture that makes you feel good, even as they're doing something else behind your back. Uh-huh. And in some ways, I'd rather, like, he is what he is. You know, the word of the last, like, year has been the word pivot. You know, this sense that at some point he realized the gravity of the situation, that, you know, he is, you know, technically the president of all of us and that he'll speak in that manner. And instead he's doubling down on what got him elected and, you know, he'll rise on that, he'll fall on that for better or worse, at least for his own fortunes.
It was very strange to hear phrases like, carnage in American streets.
Gangs.
Like, gangs.
I'm surprised he didn't say the inner cities were crumbling.
Oh, God.
He has in the past, so...
Yeah.
We definitely had a conversation last night, Austin, with another editor at Vice about, like, trying to attempt to look at some good news happening in the world.
Yeah.
You know, Chelsea Manning is going to be out of prison soon.
And there's a big march tomorrow.
I'm gonna be marching in New York tomorrow.
Awesome.
I'm gonna try to do my part. I'm gonna bring some medical stuff just in case. We'll see.
It's a good idea. there is a story up on the site by the time you hear this that is all about the Women's March on Washington and the kind of adjacent marches across the world that are in support of that march.
Over 30 across the world and 50, one in every state in America, at least one in every state. So there are hundreds of sister marches if folks are interested.
And that's up on waypoint.vice.com, written by Danielle. We also have up some other great stuff this week about if you're in a politics mindset right now, let me tell you, you can come to our website and get a bunch of stuff. We have a great piece by Joseph Nope. Not Nope, Joseph Nope. I'm just in a Nope
Leslie
state of
Nope.
mind.
You know, it's Nope. Cool. She's great.
Joseph Nope wrote a really great reported piece on the ways in which the Affordable Care Act and its potential repeal could affect game development. We've seen like a real explosion in the independent game scene over the last 5 years, And the kind of thing that this piece gets at is like, oh, right, like being able to have healthcare has been part of that, where small developers can not be turned away for pre-existing conditions, where they can be sure that like they'll have access to some degree of healthcare. And then also like mid-sized developers can, instead of going in on a really expensive plan, can just give a stipend to their workers and be sure that they can at least go to the marketplace to try to get something. it's really an interesting piece. And there's all sorts of other things about the ways in which, you know, that policy has had, you know, helped with diversity inside of the games industry. It helped with just a feeling of stability, like all sorts of really fantastic, interesting stuff. So check that out. And then Patrick, you wrote a really good piece this week also on the GOP arcade and kind of political satire game.
Yeah, yeah. I interviewed the three folks that put together a lot of, you might be familiar with a game called Thoughts and Prayers. There's another one called Bomb the Right Place that'll make you feel bad about yourself for not yep. knowing more about Middle East geography. Yeah, it's essentially just kind of talking through their – basically these people that didn't design games before suddenly designing games and trying to use sort of satire and humor and trying to convey messages through sort of game design and sort of what they've learned and how people have responded, because like it won't shock me if things like that are – you know, often in tumultuous times, art is one of the – you know, when you don't necessarily have – the political votes, art and culture are often where that stuff is expressed. Like we see a lot of stuff during, you know, like the Vietnam War and other sort of tumultuous times. And so it won't surprise me if games are a part of that over the next 4 years.
One of the things that is that I think we've been thinking about a lot lately. We're thinking a lot about the sorts of articles that we can write, not only to report on stuff that's happening, but also the sort of articles that we can write that are about outfitting the reader with some set of skills or some set of the ability to go out in the world and make something cool. And I roll my eyes at the kind of Amanda Palmer, the next few years are going to be filled with great music thing. if you don't know what that is, feel free to Google that. Amanda Palmer of the Dresden Dolls said this days before moving to Australia from the United States. You know, and for, but I do think that there is not an opportunity. I think that there is value in going out and making cool shit right now and making stuff that engages with your experience and that is something you want to watch or play or read. And so I think a lot of us here at Vice are thinking about that right now and the type of journalism that maybe gets denigrated often, like kind of like service journal, how-to journalism. But we kind of were thinking about trying to do that in some cool ways. So look forward to that next week. You guys just want to take some questions today? You want to go back to our politics hole, maybe?
Yeah, let's go back to the hole of politics. Let's dig ourselves back in.
Let's dig deeper into the politics bucket. Because
to the hole of
I'm
politics.
Not going to lie. Like, I'm leaning on other people to help me through today and their questions to maybe turn our rambling into something a little more pointed. So give me
way
a number.
Pointed, even.
Thank you. Way pointed.
Go ahead, Patrick. You watched the inauguration. You're in more pain than I am right now. You
one
you
to
take
31.
The first one.
I had one beer, so let's go with number one.
Good. All right. This comes from Raj. How do you see Trump's upcoming term impacting the tone and timbre in which gaming discusses, interacts, and evolves when it comes specifically to the issues of race and gender? There's an overwhelming sense that a lot of progress was made during Obama, but the question is now, will these issues regress or progress in spite of a Trump presidency, and how will it shape the lexicon and discourse that gaming falls into? Which is kind of like a broad question. I think we can be even a little broader than just race and gender here, too.
I really hope it means people, game critics, people who are engaging in games, I hope it means they're holding developers' feet to the fire harder than ever. I hope it means that people are saying things like, no, this is bullshit. We've seen that this is bullshit. We need to progress rather than regress. We need to actually kind of take things further. I'm really hoping that this makes me angry. I think it makes a lot of people angry. And when I'm saying this, I'm talking about the current climate. Politically speaking, and I'm hoping it makes people say, no, we're going to fight harder. And that goes back to what you were just saying about, you know, art is really useful in these times. Art is really incredibly useful, not just for the artist, but for the people who engage with it, the people who get something out of it. So I'm really, really hoping that sort of translates into games as well.
Yeah, I don't know. I think it's hard to say because I don't know that any of us are – I don't know that we've settled on like what this means. Like,
right.
You know, I mean, we spent 18 months in a protracted presidential campaign, and then the last couple of months sort of hand-wringing over what might happen. And, you know, what starts today is the actual presidency of Donald Trump and the actual rolling out of although I guess he's apparently taking the weekend off and starting on Monday.
Of course he is.
I mean, it was a long campaign, I guess, sure. But, you know, like the what actually happens, like what the response is, what people's feelings are, like what those – how that sharpens is, I think, yet to be determined because so much seems at stake, but it's yet unclear like where those sort of proxy fights are going to happen. I think that's where you end up seeing people sort of sharpen their rhetoric and their, you know, sort of rhetorical swords in terms of how that rolls out in art. I would be shocked if much changes in sort of like the AAA space. Just because it's so slow moving, right? Like a game that wants to respond to Trump, right? Like if it goes in development now, might be coming out like as he's finishing up 4 years, or like right. You know, who else knows? So I would imagine like there won't be like direct responses, but you can see things more subliminally, right? Like sort of like cracking down on minorities and things like that that have been those existed before Trump will exist after Trump. I guess I'm more excited about sort of like independent developers, smaller games, things that can be created, released, and iterated on in a fashion that's a little quicker. And I'll be curious to see how that happens and where video games find that voice, because, you know, over the course of, you know, Obama's presidency, you know, it's probably true that like a lot of game development like leans liberal. Like I don't have the stats on that, but like
sure. That's
my gut feeling based on, you know, all my time in it. How does that change under, a radically different presidency? Like, I don't think we know, because I think a lot of people were a lot younger under George Bush and weren't necessarily as politically active or activated. Spent 8 years under Obama. In which you may have really disagreed with him on lots of policies, including myself, but generally felt like you had a dude with a good head on his shoulders that was trying to make the right decision. And now that may not be the case. And so how art changes and what that means, like, I don't know. But excited is the wrong word, but I am excited to see how games respond in that moment, because games are uniquely matured in this moment in a way they haven't been in the past.
In the past, yeah, totally. Like it's I think about the ability for – so like on one hand, I like to think about the ability of how quick it is for – or how possible it is for any one of us to say, all right, I'm going to take the next 2 weeks off and make something, or the next week off and make something, like, which is, of course, based on the notion that we could take a week off to do that. Or, you know, I'm going to spend my you know, 2 hours before bed over the next 3 months making a cool thing. That is the thing that the tools exist for now.
Yes.
At the same time, like, it's one of those things that I had not thought about it until that Joseph Knoop article about how that boom of independent games came at a time where things for many Americans felt like we were in recovery and then was stable. And then in which many Americans, again, had access to healthcare, had access to not just like direct tools, but like some degree of arts funding that's being cut. Some degree of support inside of communities that were made up of people from multiple different, ethnicities and nationalities. And who knows what the future for immigration looks like in America, that were made up of people who finally felt comfortable being, you know, out in public and in public spaces. Like those sorts of things were part of what made the independent community blow up. I'm not saying like, thanks Obama, you invented indie gaming.
Right.
but
culture in that era did have a lot of things that contributed, for sure.
Absolutely. Totally. And so I'm curious now, like, there's no putting the genie back in the bottle. I don't think this is like tomorrow Donald Trump is going to walk into the, or Monday Donald Trump is going to walk into the White House and like, no more indie games, and that's it, and they're done. But I do want to think about the material, like the material foundation on which a lot of that happened, and like to see that stuff threatened is scary, because the result isn't just like, oh, we're not going to get The Witness 2 or whatever.
Right.
Or, like, there won't be more Porpentine games. Like, it's I mean, that's, both of those are things that are possible. But the second thing there is, like, those people will filter back into the AAA space, or try to, or leave games altogether and go right. You know, I have so many people who used to make, or people in my life who are like, yeah, I used to make games for a couple of years, and now I'm going to go into teaching. I'm going to go into finance. I'm going to try to do the poetry thing, because, like, the gaming space just doesn't feel like it's for me anymore. And I could see that happening with a lot of people who right now are making really fucking cool projects. You know, I think about, like,
yeah,
Scott Benson, who is on the team that's making Night in the Woods, and, like, without the ACA, without those protections, does he just go to be an animator at Nickelodeon? You know? I'm sure he'd make a great show there, but, like, I want him to keep making cool games.
I can also think specifically, you know, in the piece I wrote about the march, there's someone who wanted to remain anonymous specifically because of immigration issues, specifically because of this sort of stuff. Right. That's what I'm most terrified of, is, like, a closing down of things that were once opening up.
Yep.
So
yeah, like, does that extend to that person's work? At what point does that go from, I want to be anonymous in this piece you're writing, to, I don't even feel comfortable speaking or making a game that speaks to my issues because I don't want to put a target on my back? And that's like, ooh, that's scary. So I'm gonna just like jump from this question to the next question that's in the bucket, because it's a good connection. This comes in from Khalif from Straight Out of Chicago. Shout out to Spawn On Me. It's a great podcast with some
it is,
some
yeah, absolutely.
Dudes. So shout out to them. He says, hey crew, with Trump being in the White House, do you think we'll see a rise in conservative leaning messages in games? Will we see a rise in anti-politically correct games? Which I don't think is necessarily I don't think that that's necessarily in a contradiction to the previous question, right? I think you could live in a world in which there are both increasingly liberal or leftist games and increasingly right-wing, conservative, alt-right, anti-politically correct, like, fuck you games.
I mean, you could argue that a lot of games in the AAA space, especially, you know, maybe not in the last, like, 2 or 3 years, but 4 years back and further, were, mm-hmm, they had a lot of militaristic sort of right-wing messages. It's not unheard of.
The Division is a game I liked a lot. I also shot a lady to death while she was screaming Black Lives Matter. Like, that happened this year.
Yeah.
Or last year.
Not even the last 2 years. Yeah, exactly.
So
it's still happening.
Like, yeah, in some way, I think I totally can imagine that stuff continuing. You know, we're a couple of months out, a month out from Tom Clancy's Coke Wars, right? Wildlands, Ghost Recon Wildlands, Ghost Recon Cocaine Mountain.
Yep.
I don't think that those two things are necessarily in opposition. I can totally see that stuff. And I mean, that also just reflects the increasing polarization, right? Like, the truth of this election wasn't just that America has a lots of, like, really regressive ideas it has never really contended with, and that those have been, in fact, used to put people in power, and now the kind of chickens have come home to roost, but also that there has been real progress made, and that the country is strongly divided on where it's going from here. So I for my money, I could very easily imagine some super out there conservative, very obviously, you know, America first, carnage in the streets games, and then also games that are, like, you know, interested in diversity and interested in you know, other sorts of conflict resolution and all that.
Yeah, I don't know necessarily there'll be a rise of, like, conservative leaning video games. Like, the arc of history has not really shown that in other mediums necessarily.
Right. I don't know that's true. It depends on, so that's the thing, is that, like, it depends.
I'm not sure if, like, the proliferation of, like, sort of, like, warmongering in Call of Duty necessarily is a reflection of, like, a conservative leaning. Like, that's also, like,
that's
a lot
true.
Of
Democrats. Like, think about the rise of modern warfare comes, like, in the middle of the war in Iraq, in the middle of lots of broader rhetoric around, like, how dope we are at war. Like, people wanted to see that, and then look today at, like,
that's in all sorts of, I don't know if I would necessarily label that as a conservative, like, that's, like, there are a lot of liberals that sign up for that sort of rhetoric too. Like, I don't know if I necessarily pigeonhole that as conservative.
Let's break out of that.
It's more of a status quo, like, you know, the status quo of America as a superpower, than it is necessarily, like, a left-right divide thing. But it is definitely, like, a the status quo is good in this case. Like, that's even, sort of what that message is saying.
I think if we were in a Hillary presidency and she's a very hot, she was a very hawkish candidate who I easily could have seen getting us involved in more armed conflicts around the world, I also think that could have been reflected in whatever games came out after that. So sure. You're right. It's not just like a left-right breakdown thing. But I do think that what I'm saying is I could totally see the policies of Trump and the Trump administration and, a Congress that is right wing being reflected in work that comes out. I also think that we should think a lot about what the alt-right will start to produce.
Yeah.
The so-called alt-right that organized white supremacist groups, organized isolationist groups will start to produce, because the same tools that make it very easy for, interesting queer collectives to put out rad work are still easy to use for other people. And I don't think we've seen any great work of the far right inside of gaming. I don't think we've seen a super successful. There is no like antithesis to Diaries of a Spaceport Janitor, but for people who hate people of color.
There was that one game. It wasn't good.
The Hatred?
Hatred happens.
That's what I said. Hatred 2 could happen. Yeah, totally. But I don't know. But I do think that like I could imagine a world in which we see an indie boom targeted at that set of consumers, and like then we'll have to see.
I wish that would happen, not because I'm not interested in like a game that is like hateful towards minorities necessarily, but like I'm not looking for that swing. But
right.
I would be for like games being used as a tool to express viewpoints, even to viewpoints that I disagreed or violently disagreed with, because I think it's an interesting way to express them. I'm skeptical whether that will actually happen.
We'll see. I think it depends on a lot of things. I wrote an editorial forever ago, like a decade ago, which was to say, like, I don't know that I stand by it all the way. Basically saying, like, people talk about the Citizen Kane of games. Again, this was a decade ago.
Oh,
so
yeah. Yep.
People totally. Talk about, like, when will we see the Citizen Kane of games? And I'm curious when instead we will see the, what the fuck is the movie I'm thinking of? Why am I blanking?
What's it about?
It's about black people overrunning the White House. It's a very important film. The guy then made a film. He made Tolerance, was his film after that.
Griffith,
yes.
Oh, you're talking about Birth of the Nation.
Birth of the Nation.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Birth of the Nation of games. When will we see that? Because like that's a film that as a piece of media influenced filmmaking in this big way. And also is despicable.
Yeah.
And like we haven't gotten that quite yet in gaming. I'm just like, ooh, this is terrible. And also, what can we learn from it technically?
Yeah.
And that's like a difficult thing that would be a difficult thing for gaming to work through.
Yeah. I certainly know some people who would say that that has happened, but they would say that about those militaristic,
about like modern warfare.
Exactly. Exactly. Right. That it has some despicable messages in it that you could argue that the colonialism and imperialism of America is like despicable, and that, oh, but it's also a technically very sound work that we could learn from. But
right. The scripting is really incredible.
Yeah.
And like, it's really fun to play.
Yeah. Right.
Right. Yep. How do we contend with that? All right. Let's get another number. We're down to 29 questions in the politics bucket. Danielle, give me a number.
Okay. Today's the 20th. Let's go with 20.
It is. Okay.
Dark day.
Okay, so this comes in from Chrysanthemum from Florida. Hi, Austin, Danielle, and Patrick, and whoever else. Hi. Loving the podcast. Y'all have helped make my hour-long commute each day enjoyable. A couple of years ago, I got to talk with a friend about a couple of VR games he was working on. One put the player in the shoes of someone walking into a Planned Parenthood surrounded by protesters yelling at them, and was intended to get protesters to empathize with people who required Planned Parenthood services. Another was the exploration of the scene of the Trayvon Martin shooting. I think that because VR can create a very strong sense of immersion, it's a really good choice for games like this, and I'm definitely excited to see games that tackle very visceral and relevant topics like these head-on. However, I'm concerned that the inaccessibility of VR could really lessen the actual impact games like these could have. What are y'all's opinions, and have you seen any games like these achieve success on any scale? Thanks, Chrysanthemum from Florida. Patrick, I know you've been doing a lot of VR stuff lately. What are your thoughts?
Haven't seen anything like that. I think there's a lot of potential there, right? Like, I think, if we think of video games as being one of the mediums that is best at generating empathy from the player or the person interacting with it, VR only enhances that, but I don't know that I've seen like great examples of that quite yet, but I think that there could be. Like, I think the idea of like, you know, I've seen, you know, ideas pitched around of like, you know, like we're, you know, these 360 degree cameras that could like take you into, you know, protests or war zones. Like being able to do that with a VR headset like seems like a really compelling way to like better understand, you know, what it's like, you know, like what the like giving a crisis is in like Syria or something like that. Like if you were able to put on a headset and like actually be around there as opposed to just like watching a little video on your phone, like I think there's something to that. But unfortunately, like a lot of that remains sort of just potential. But I think there is, you know, which is a lot of like larger issues with VR at the moment is still sort of, oh, you could do that. Oh, that would be interesting and not as much of it. But
to get to Chrysanthemum's other point there, like who sees it right now? Like who has access to VR? I guess Daydream is launching in the near future. Pre-orders are, I think, are available now for Google's slightly more affordable VR solution.
I don't know how much Gear VR is, or not Gear VR, but like what's the like Samsung has been pushing their VR solution for a while.
But still, like it's a limited audience, and like I think that's it's tough already to want to tackle one of these big issues, and then if you're like, okay, but only people who can afford these, you know, hundreds of dollars expensive headsets can see it. It's like, well, my audience might actually be the ones who super can't afford that, so I want to try to scale down or wait until that stuff is more affordable to work in that medium. Like, who knows? I'm curious.
Personally, like, I think browser games have been amazing at this sort of thing. Like, I think of, you know, the sort of sterling gold example is Anna Anthropy's Dysphoria from several years ago. It's, you know, you can play it in a browser, and it just, you know, the way that games are so good at actually make, you know, you have to interact. The story cannot go forward if you don't interact. So you have to engage with the systems. You have to engage with feeling out of place. You have to engage with feeling dysphoria to even, you know, play the game. Things like that, I think, are still pretty much the, you know, the way to go at this point. But I don't like VR necessarily yet, but I'm interested in it being a real thing. I'm interested in it being accessible. I'm interested in it being accessible to people who don't have a lot of money. So
one thing I would say is, unfortunately, like lots of people that aren't us don't play browser games. One of the giant stumbling blocks, if Tim Cook of Apple did anything in the next 4 years, I would love it if he lifted the restrictions on the App Store for currently not allowing sort of actual political video games or anything that takes any sort of stance related to politics in any direction.
Or history, like, or the world, or anything.
The App Store is extremely, extremely limiting in terms of what you can actually create there, which is a vestige of Steve Jobs. The App Store is where, you know, is one of the biggest places where people access things. And the idea that one of the places where people can be reached that is off limits to political speech is distressing. But I think we're able to hand wave it a little bit more in the Obama era. And I think it distresses me way more in the Trump era, where like you have all these people with all these devices and there's no way for creators to communicate with them because Apple just straight up says, no, that's just, we don't consider that to be what games should do. Go
and like all of these people who've gotten really good about making mobile games over the last 5 to 10 years, right? Like people who've like figured out how to make really cool shit on the iPhone, who maybe now want to say something, can't do it there. And that's a bummer. And I'm with you. I hope Tim Cook changes policy. Let's call on Tim Cook today. Fucking open up the App Store. Come on, Tim. Hey, Tim. Come on.
We know you're listening.
We know you're a big fan. We're very flattered. You know. We're pleased. We appreciate it, Tim. Tim. This is very confusing for Tim Barnes, by the way. Who's going to
cut Tim? Oh
for
my
us,
God.
This podcast.
If Tim
for
Barnes
us.
Can change the policies on the Barnes. App Store, then that's fine too.
Tim? Step one, Tim Barnes. Give me a call. I want to hear more of that Lord of the Rings stuff that you were telling us the other day. That stuff sounds great. Two. Come on, change the App Store, Tim.
Come on, Tim.
Give me another number, and we will keep working through our bucket.
It's 2017. Let's go to 17.
Nice one. This comes in from Dimpta, and it is a difficult question.
Great.
Does the plethora of cheap, addictive digital games available to modern people drive down political and community engagement? Does anyone have an answer for this that is based on something other than their gut prejudices and or vague platitudes that sometimes gaming brings people together? I met my significant other via gaming, etc.
Way to undercut all of our answers. Yes,
which is why it's a good fucking question, Dimphna. I think that this is a difficult question that is one of those things that is important for us to think about because this is what we do with our lives. And it is really easy to fall into the trap if you're in a position like us to just like not engage with it at all and just like, nope, game. This is my job. It's my job. That's all I have to think about. Or to fall into like despair over feeling like you're wasting your life or that you're not doing something important. or to fall into those easy platitudes. So I'm curious, Danielle and Patrick, like
once upon a time in 2010 or so, I actually did some actual research into this because I was trying to sort of spearhead a tiny little game development thing at the ACLU. So I sort of had to convince my colleagues there, many of whom were not gamers, many of whom were in their 60s or 70s, old school activists who were not necessarily on board. And
quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number smart beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 50% on the Sleep Number limited edition smart bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at a Sleep Number store or sleepnumber.com.
I was looking into the work that was being done at the time, Games for Change, and iCivics.org, which was actually right. Sandra Day O'Connor's games portal. She was sort of involved in making a games portal teaching about civics kind of to kids through these little management sim style things. Sure. Yeah, it was pretty rad, actually. So okay. There was a time where
I'm going to believe that's true because you just said it was.
Yeah, no, I know. And this is
did
this
you
is
write
real...
about this on your iCivics? Is it iCivics?
iCivics.org. Yeah,
I'm looking at
it's
it.
It's actually really cool. Not gonna
don't
lie.
Just learn civics, play civics.
Yeah, they had some good outcomes, but like again, this was 7 years ago, so I don't remember the numbers. I remember seeing some encouraging research that was done on the educational value mm-hmm. of types of games like this, especially sort of like sim games, like management sim kinds of games that actually sort of force you to engage on some level with the ways these things actually kind of work. But that's 7 year old, that's 7 year old data. I have not since actually looked at, any white papers. So
there is a game called Do I Have a Right? In which you run your own firm of lawyers who specialize in constitutional law.
It's great. It's so cool. It's a cool game.
The art for it, I'm just going to send this over right now, is like, it's definitely of its age, of just like someone who likes Phoenix Wright and is not the artist on Phoenix Wright, making, it's like very good like 2012 visual novel art. I love it. I'm going to put it into our chat.
It's a really cool little game. I'm not going to lie. I played a lot of it. It was cool.
Oh, wow.
Uh-huh.
You are not kidding.
I'm not kidding. It's a little horny. It's a little like...
Oh, yeah.
I was going to say...
It's a little horny.
They want to
mix it up a little. Those two have gone into a closet in that office.
They have, absolutely.
Yep.
Yep. They've definitely quickly fixed their ties.
Oh, it was heated.
Of liberties.
Yep.
Anyway,
we're stepping over this very important question, which I guess on one hand, I see the direction you're going, which is like, hey, there are ways in which games can engage with these difficult things and like actually maybe teach us something, right? Is that the direction
yes.
you're going?
Yes, I mean, I think games like this that were actually made with constitutional lawyers sort of at the... in the development of, horny constitutional lawyers, which, they all are, in case you didn't know.
I'd play that game. I'd play that game.
I'd watch that show.
The Good Wife, if you will, of constitutional law. I think there is actually some decent evidence that there is actual sort of political literacy being taught there. I think that's good. I don't know if I'm on board with, you know, and frankly, I don't know kind of what's going on with Games for Change at the moment. I do know there was a whole lot of sort of glad-handing at some point in the past about games that were made for social change and news games and all sorts of stuff. I think there was a lot written about them and not a lot of actual research done on their sort of efficacy as educational tools. So, you know, I think there's a danger of a lot of things being said and nothing actually being said.
You know, to speak to that, like, briefly, I definitely think this is a situation where there are people who, the closer you are to those things, the more actually critical you are about whether or not they're good or useful,
for sure.
Or more, especially the more knowledgeable you are about the fact that there has not been a lot of research. I did a talk, I was the moderator of a talk at the Columbia School of Education last year, along with some people who work in kind of the serious games or you know, kind of like educational game space. And they were all like super aware that like, listen, you need to test these things. There is not, you don't just say I'm going to make a game about poverty and then you made a game about poverty. Like, you need way more than that. The specific example that they gave was a game that was designed to be about, to teach people that poverty wasn't like poor planning or like a bad choice. It wasn't just like, oh hey, you know, I woke up one day and decided to be lazy. It's that living under poverty restricts your choices to begin with and blah blah blah. And then the actuality of that game design was, if you played it right, you got to be super rich, or like you get to not be poor. You could super easy. And so the takeaway from people when they tested for what their feelings were about people who were lower income, the response was, after playing the game, more people believed it was the fault of poor people that they were poor.
Ugh.
As like literally completely the inverse of what the intended effect was.
Yep.
So yeah, like I'm definitely sort of skeptical. Though the other thing that happens is definitely like someone hears that someone is making games about real issues and then thinks, how can we get money behind this? How can we get money from this? And that stuff rarely comes, I think, from the people who've dedicated their lives to this thing that doesn't make them a lot of money, but does come from people who are like opportunistic. And that sucks when that happens.
And I just think it's also for these types of games, like if you tell someone this is a game where you're going to learn about poor people, like you're automatically turning away a lot of people that are not like, they're going to start thinking edutainment and they're like just not going to go down that path. And that's why games like Cart Life and Papers, Please are exceptionally good at being political games without being necessarily outwardly like waving a political flag, right? Like Papers, Please is about like immigration policy and like Cart Life is about like lower income workers. And they're really good at like imbuing you lessons about what it is like from those two different viewpoints without sort of saying like, hey, here's what you're going to learn today. Not to say games like that can't be useful. I just feel like if you start with that premise, you're already going to get a lot of people that, regardless of like how well designed it is or how interesting it is, you're going to lose a lot of people along the way.
Yeah. I will say that we have, to use the word of the year, pivoted. We found our pivot point to get away from the difficult question, which is, the question was basically, is the fact that we're all playing cheap, addictive, like empty games, is that driving down community engagement, local engagement with the issues in our lives? And I think you can probably expand that.
That's just media. That's not games.
Like, you can expand that beyond games. But like,
yes, absolutely. Like 100%. Yeah. Like there is like, you know, being snippy on Twitter is a lot easier than going out and to marching.
So what do we do about this? As people whose job it is to cover games, like, is it our duty to like be more rigorous in our coverage, to not give as much attention to those things, to try to use those as a vector to talk about other, like I'm spitballing. I don't have an answer to this right now. I think it's a fucking difficult question to say, like, in the world in which we are saturated by cheap media that distracts us instead of which engages us, or that distracts us instead of connects us, what do we do as journalists and critics, but even just as citizens and people in the world, to get to live in that world and encourage that sort of community building?
I think we can advocate for a balance because I think there's a lot of value in games that are just fun and just a distraction. Sure. If somebody is having a really difficult time in their life, it's okay for them to, you know, seek, you know, a little quiet healing space with you know, whatever match 3 game that gives them a few minutes of pleasure and happiness. But
Solitarica is really good. Play
yeah,
Solitarica.
There's a lot to be said about things that make you feel good and give you a break from how fucking horrible right. the world is. But it always has to come with a balance. I remember just today, Heather Alexandra, friend of the show, I guess, was tweeting about like, yeah, take a minute if you need a minute, you know, do whatever is fun, whatever you find healing. But also sort of like you can get your mind away, but your body ready to march. She said something really sort of poignant like that, where it was like, yeah, I it's okay to take a break, but make sure you come back to reality full force and actually do the fighting that needs to be fought, basically.
I think it is the challenge for us, like the three of us, is realizing the sort of like media reality we are in.
Yeah.
And yes, you can hand wring over that, but also that is what it is. And so the challenge for us is how do you make it enticing for people to engage with that rather than getting upset that they won't? The challenge should be, how do you do it so they will right. in a way that you can bring them in? And so that's what we need to figure out. You know, it's things we were thinking about this week. It's like, all right, it's the inauguration. Like, how do we find angles in video games that are going to get people interested and engaged? Like the Affordable Care Act piece is like a great example of that. Like, this affects the games that you want to play, which is a policy in real life. It's not just, you know, a slice of social justice. Like, it's a real thing that's going to affect the games you want to play. And so
it's people with cancer. It's people with yeah. Like, fuck.
But it's on us to find a way, like, rather than complaining that like people won't click on it, it's like right. how do you get people to click on it? And that's on us to find the angles. That's on us to find the ways in. And I mean, that's going to be an ongoing challenge because it's not going to get easier. The things are going to get diced up more and more going forward. And so we need to, instead of complaining about like why won't these young kids just look at this stuff, like take your vegetables, right?
Like, phone.
Yeah, like they're not gonna. So instead, how do you get through to them through that avenue? And like, that's the great challenge for us in media is finding a way to do that.
Yeah, I also just want to say, I don't think this is. let me put on my philosophy cap real quick.
Yeah.
Two things. So one is, this isn't a new dilemma in some way, right? Like, there is one of the philosophers who has been most influential for me has been Foucault. I've mentioned Foucault a bunch, maybe not on this podcast, but and Foucault like really cleanly divides into like an old period and a new period. And in the old period, he's like deeply interested in systems of power and the ways in which power produce individuality or produce the self, right? Like he writes about sexuality and kind of and history and about how the kind of systems of power help produce what the kind of status quo is when it comes to what counts as sexually deviant, and how that's all actually tied into this historical shift in power. It's really fascinating stuff. And then in his later life, he goes from talking about biopower and about the control of bodies and about how we're all controlled to talking about self-care. And like a lot of the discourse that we have around self-care, a lot of that comes from Foucault and people who've studied Foucault and people who wrote against Foucault. And suddenly becomes this guy who's saying like, actually, I'm choosing to have the sorts of sex I want to have. Like, and that is itself a revolutionary thing he's doing. And so he goes from being the sort of person who says, put down your phone. He didn't say put down your phone. He was writing in the mid-century.
Right.
Put down your phone. So being the person who's saying, actually, we are better for occasionally picking up our phone and letting ourselves do the thing that is wasteful, that is not about being productive. I think that's a really interesting dilemma because like there are people who like that old Foucault. It's like, I miss the old Foucault. Straight off the blow Foucault. Like it's if you want to get easy about it. That's like an old thing. That is not a unique thing in 2017. The other thing I'll say, and I think this gets to Patrick's point, is I think a lot about there was an interview done with the philosopher Heidegger, who is not the best dude. He spent some time in the Nazi Party, left it. I'm not a Heideggerian necessarily. I think he is, you know, like Birth of a Nation, did some things at the technical level that were really interesting, but also, my dude, you were a Nazi for a bit, so, eh. But in a later interview in his life, someone kind of said, well, like, it seems as if this is it. Like, it seems as if the left is defeated, and it seems as if the world is in its place, and, like, we're gonna be here. Things don't seem like they're gonna change in a big way. He said, only a god can save us. And I don't think he meant, or I don't, it's not just me, you know, scholars don't think he meant, like, only God can come down from heaven and save us. He meant that only things that we could never predict will shake things up. And for us, that's stuff that seems irrelevant to us in the day-to-day. It means that, like, there could be a radical revolution in Indonesia tomorrow, and, like, no one knows what that would do to the sphere of the world, right? It means that the situation with China could change in a huge way. It means that you know, a really powerful political figure could come out of nowhere, who talks to people in a way that you know, really does engage them. It means that there could be a national disaster tomorrow. There could be a storm that we haven't thought of 3 months from now that changes the entire Trump presidency and the state of America as we know it. There could be an earthquake. They're like, all that stuff. And for Heidegger, the goal isn't to, like, let that thing wipe through history and change it. It's to be ready for that thing and to be ready to be prepared and to have developed the skills necessary to move in that moment and take political action. And so I think for us, this goes back to the, like, thing I was saying earlier about, like, trying to get into types of journalism that equip you. We want when those opportunities emerge for you to be able to do something. Like, Danielle, being an EMT is probably really tough and challenging, but I'm glad you're going to be an EMT at that march, because if something happens and someone gets hurt, you will be equipped for that moment. I think we can think about ourselves as being politically equipped in that same way. That's a talk I did not expect to give today.
It was good.
Anyway. Let's get another question.
Talk number two you did not expect to give today.
And it's true. It's true.
Well, that gives us a number, although we just did two.
Is Jaden on this call?
Yeah. Jaden.
I can just go. Do you want me to go get Jaden?
Jaden.
I could go get, hey, Jaden. I'll open my window and shout. Fuck, man.
Jaden.
It's just going to get, here's the thing. I have to walk past there. There's just going to be people and cameras.
You're a celebrity
start going
now, Austin.
Okay, but wait, what if I just start going in the middle of the night when no one is there and start doing my own...
You should do what you just did, yeah.
What if I just get a table and just do a late night show out there every night?
It's a great idea.
Huh.
Get Jaden to hang out with you.
Right, me and Jaden.
Sit him down at the table, you know.
Listen, like... let's go to school, Jaden. I'm going to teach you about Foucault real quick. You know, all relationships...
Is that a food?
Yeah, Foucault is a food. That's correct.
Sounds delicious.
Jaden Smith's Twitter is delightful. Give me a... You said two?
Yeah.
You said two. This is a good transition. This is a good question. This
All
is
right.
from Andrew, who says, has our recent stressful political climate changed the sort of games you play in your free time? Personally, I find myself drifting away from stressful tests of skill and more towards comfort food gaming, like music games, grindy JRPGs, and farming simulators.
We actually had this discussion on Idle Weekend last week about being very, you know, having all this guilt about... everything, but also sort of like piles of shame and having, you know, choice paralysis and being stressed out by politics. And we basically decided that Witcher 3 is the answer. I loaded up the Witcher 3 again. I've been playing a little bit of that. So, yes, I have gone back to something that I know I love that will actually take my brain away from the current world and actually give me a real escape. And it's like tried and true. I know it's going to do what I need it to do. So.
I guess, but like I just did a series of, so I'm 41 hours into The Witcher now. I'm keeping it
good,
real. I'm keeping it
good.
Witching. Geralt and I
just
are going
witching.
On adventures. Gotta keep witching. And like it got dark.
Well, it's a dark game, but it's like it engages
me. I mean,
me
it does
in a way
have a day night cycle.
Won't. You know what
Fuck
I mean?
Off,
oh, it has a day night cycle. Good.
I actually, so real, I'm just going to sidebar really quick to complain about this Witcher quest. Can I do that? Is that
yes.
allowed?
Uh-huh,
yeah,
sure, yeah.
Witch it up.
Wait, we didn't have,
no Witcher
Wednesday.
On Mondays.
Witcher Wednesday, or no Witcher moment in the podcast, so here it is.
So, I just did the quest, there's a series of quests on which you, spoilers for the, like, early mid-game of The Witcher, probably, which is, I'm in Novigrad, and I'm looking for Dandelion, who is your, like, bard bud, a.k.a., what do they call
BB.
Him?
BB.
Mr. William Regal. My name is Mr. Regal. And that quest, the structure of that quest line is really good because it blooms, it like blossoms, it like spreads like a vine where it's like, oh, I have to go here. And this is true for a lot of The Witcher stuff. I'm like, oh, I have to go here. And then I have to go talk to somebody else because they have information. And then that sprouts off another different quest line. And the first half of that I really loved because it was like, oh, he, you know, he left, if you look at his planner, it shows that he's talked to all these different, like, women that he's courting, basically. And each one of them, or many of them, lead off into another side thing where there's like, oh, you're going to race a horse against a general because he's weirdly connected in this. And, oh, you're going to go teach, like, sword fighting to this young, like, aristocrat woman. It's really interesting. And then it got to, it kept doing that in this way that I thought was really interesting and really, like, it's not a thing you see in games a lot. Normally you have the quest and then you do the quest and then you hit the complete button. And in this, it was like spreading off into all these side things. But then it got to one that ended in like, that felt just like lazy as fuck of just, not lazy. It felt rushed. It felt like they'd spent a lot of time setting up this quest, which was about locating this dude. I don't remember why I was even trying to locate that dude, but then like you find out where he is. This very powerful character is like, oh yeah, he's over here. I keep him in this house. He has this house.
Oh, I remember this now.
And like that powerful character shows up out of nowhere, and it is like not very well introduced. I know he's a character in the series, but like still. And then you go into that dude's house, and it's just like a slaughterhouse in there. It's just like out of a bad like episode of SVU or something. I'm just like, oh, there are just dead women everywhere.
Yeah.
And the premise is that he's been living like this indefinitely, like for a while, for at least days or weeks. And it just like felt like it was painted last second. Like, oh, we really need you to hate this guy. What's the thing he could have done? Oh, murdered dozens of women. that's the thing. And it's just like, ah, this is just feels cheap. Like, this doesn't feel like they set it up in a way. Maybe I missed stuff on the way. But other than that, I'm having a really good time. I got that troll that paint. I found another cool troll who, like, was guarding some gold. It's good. Good trolls in that game.
Trolls are great.
Anyway, games that we play when we are trying to distract ourselves from politics. Again, building off of the last question, actually. Patrick, are you playing anything? Like, are you finding time for anything that's like, this is just relaxing?
I don't have time for things like that. That's what my kid is, right? Like, so I literally don't have the free time beyond playing the games that I need to do my job to make time for games that are just, this is for me.
Right.
But that free time is taken up by my kid who, like, in some ways, it's like a larger game. Like, can you raise, like, a child to make a meaningful impact in the world and make this place a better place than you arrived? That's my game.
That's a good goal. That's a hell of a goal.
You know, I've played some games that take place in real time before, but that sounds like a real long-term game. That's like
it's
one
like
of those...
You have to sign, like, this 18-year contract. Sure. Yeah, I should have looked at the terms of service before.
It used to be, it actually used to be a 26-year-old or 26-year long contract where you at least cover them for 26 years.
Until the ACA.
Now it's back to 18, I think.
I will say that's the ultimate game. I will say I've found a lot of solace lately in learning wrestling,
right,
and jiu-jitsu and pushing people around. That's a game, I guess.
Yeah, and I've definitely been looking for
therapeutic.
I spent the last couple of weeks thinking about trying to find a hobby that was something that was wasteful. That was like, this is for me. I'm never going to talk about it publicly. Not because it's bad, but because like it's not.
It could be bad though. It's allowed to be bad. It can be bad.
I'll be bad.
You bad, Austin.
It could be bad. But like that isn't a thing that someone could tweet at me and say, "Can I see you do that thing?" Not because it's illegal to see them or like wrong or explicit.
But it could be.
We live in a very public world. We live in a world in which Twitch IRL is a thing, in which there is pressure as public figures to open ourselves up in a big way and to have everything be part of an oov. And I don't want that. I want a thing that isn't that, and playing games can't be that for us anymore, right? That, like, Patrick, you and I need to write that letter about, or letter series back and forth about Gravity Rush 2 and Class, which, like, Jesus Christ, speaking
That's a lot.
Of, and that's like that was a game where I was like, this is going to be a light and fun. I'm going to fly around. I'm going to fall around. And then, like,
and it is. It is definitely that.
Yep.
But it also is not that.
There is also some class warfare. So, it's. I think that's so. So for us, it sounds like maybe because it's our job, we all look outside of games for that sort of thing.
Yeah, I watch horror films. I read. Like, I don't look to games for that stuff because I'm in games too deep, guys.
It's in too deep.
I will say there are games I like, go to on some specifically bad days. I really, on days where I'm just like, I need a thing, I replay Gravity Bone and 30 Flights of Loving, which are like tight little...
Good choice.
I could play both of those in like an hour, hour, 15 minutes. There's like, it's just like really aesthetically pleasing to me. It's sort of like eating a really nice meal. And that's one of my... like bits of escapism, I guess. I don't do.
I think
that
today,
often.
Today I might pay $4.99 for Knack on the PlayStation Store.
It's listen, nice. One good thing today, Patrick.
It's on sale.
75% off.
That's pretty intense.
Like democracy.
oh.
Knack 2. For people who don't know, there is a really good song.
Oh yes,
the new Waypoint anthem.
Knack 2. Feet. What about you?
You find that on twitter.com/waypoint. Just dig through the feed until you find the Knack 2 trap rap song.
So you hear it echoing off in the distance.
Let's do one more question and wrap it
okay.
up. Okay. Give me a number between 1 and 20-something. 26? 24? 26.
Why don't you pick one?
All right, I will. One second. I'm going to go to a dice roller.
Of course.
A 26-sided dice. That's
oh,
a thing.
Good. Do they make those?
No. Roll 26-sided die. Thanks, Google.
Are you doing this on a website?
Dice.virtuworld.com.
Oh, okay. Nice.
That's not true.
Sure.
That only goes up to 9 sides. I typed dice roller into Google, and it was just like, it just said 2. Like, you did it. You rolled a 2 on a 2d6. But it says 6-sided die. I don't know how to change that to a 26-sided die.
Well, we'll roll 3 of them, and then...
You could add them.
You know.
I could add them. Okay, so I'll roll... Yeah. I'll roll... 26 isn't divided by 6.
I know. I'm just saying.
You're overthinking it.
Add a couple together.
Okay, I'll add 4 together. I'm going to roll 4d6. So, here we go. Ready? 3 plus 5 is 8, plus 1 is 9, plus 4 is 13. Lucky number 13.
13's a great number.
13's a great number. This one comes in from Steve from Kingston-upon-Hull in England. Hey, Waypoint. Big fan of you guys. I love the show. So my political gaming question is, this is a good one to end on. If video game characters ran for parties, which video game character do you think would run for which party? And what policies do you think they would try to enforce? What do you think their vote campaign would look like? Also, Danica should be on the podcast more. Shout out to Danica. Thanks, Steve.
Danica Let's can't get on until she writes a new poem.
That's true. A better poem.
Banned.
Yeah, she's got to do that.
So let's all pick one character, one video game character. Tell me what their platform is, and tell me what party they'd be part of. Be any party.
Maybe we could all work it out together.
Yeah, that's a good idea. Yeah.
Rather than
so let's pick. Who do we pick?
Geralt? What is Geralt up to?
Geralt?
Is Geralt a libertarian?
I don't know. Geralt likes to.
He's definitely an independent. He might be an independent.
He's definitely an independent.
Independent.
Well,
sure.
Or
but like, is he? He's one of those independents that's like, oh, I'm an independent. Like, yeah, you're not.
No, you're not. You're not. You caucus with the Dems. Like, that's just...
yeah, exactly. Exactly.
I think so. One, he wants to get paid, right?
Yeah.
But at the same time, I feel like he knows from personal experience about the value of a strong infrastructure. One, Roach can only gallop like by its own free will on roads. If you just hold down that A button twice, he'll just run on the road without Geralt.
Yep.
So that's good for Geralt. Two, he's seen what like villages in disrepair, what happens to them. And the thing that happens is monsters happen. Monsters or like
bloody... he does things for poor people, he does things for rich people. Like he's all over the place.
He seems to respect women's autonomy.
He does
as well.
He does.
I feel like
and he loves women. He loves women.
That's for sure.
That's women love him.
And
also.
Women love
that's
him
true.
Too.
That's true.
Women will turn out to vote for Geralt, especially like good beard Geralt. Dudes will show up for Geralt too. Listen, he is.
Yes, they will.
I think the other thing here is I like to think a lot about Geralt as being he's a traditional guy, right? Like I think he's despite all of this, he comes from he remembers a different time for the world. One where
how old
like
is
him,
he? Do we know?
Older.
He's like 103 or something.
He remembers before women and black people could vote.
He does.
And he's a you know what? My Geralt likes minorities. My Geralt is not humans first.
Yep.
He's not Kaer Morhen first. He likes the, he's all about the war. He's a cosmopolitan. That's my Geralt anyway.
He's nearly 100 years old or about 100 years old.
Okay. That's some shit you say in a bar. That's some shit you say to someone you think looks attractive.
I mean, this is Google. I'm about
100. It's me, Geralt.
About 100 years old.
Yeah.
Young.
I've learned a lot of things.
He's a worldly man. He's a very worldly man. He sees all different cultures.
Right. He has to.
And respects them.
There are contracts everywhere. The elves take out contracts. The dwarves take out contracts. He doesn't say no to all dwarven contracts. He has to work across the aisle with everybody.
He's going to go help
a
troll find some
Democrat,
paint.
He's like a Democrat, I think.
Yeah, I think.
Maybe.
That's bad, though.
Yeah.
Well, it's more... I feel like
I guess Geralt can be bad. I don't know. I guess we can't necessarily shape Geralt into what we want. Geralt is Geralt.
Do you think Geralt feels... What do you think Geralt feels about the Witch Hunters? Because, like, the Witch Hunters are, like, doing his job, but, like, in this really professionalized, buttoned-up way, where, like, he's the guy who knows all the old tricks, and they've all gone to, like, technical college to, like, learn the, like...
The privatization of...
Well, that's the thing. He's kind of a blue-collar dude.
Right.
Like, he's kind of like the plumber who, instead of, you know, taking care of your toilet, takes care of your monster problem.
Yeah.
He's, like, very, like, blue-collar, like, yeah.
So I think he votes Democrat. I think he votes Democrat or liberal or, you know, wherever you are. Definitely a pro... Is he pro-union, though? Maybe he's not pro-union.
I feel like he probably gets... Geralt does not like institutional order. He doesn't like bureaucracy and things slowing him up. Like, he just wants to get shit done.
Right. Just get out of my way.
He doesn't want to wait.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Man, I don't know where... I don't think he fits in the spectrum, guy. I think the political spectrum doesn't quite capture Geralt.
I mean, he's kind of like a...
Socially liberal.
Yeah.
Socially liberal, and also, like, believes in infrastructure.
Right, but also...
So he can't be full libertarian.
Right, but also wants to be able to do whatever wants to do.
But wants his freedom.
He's not into regulation.
Right, pro-infrastructure, anti-regulation. That's a thing that doesn't exist in America
so
right
weird.
Now. Right?
Yeah.
I guess the limited regulations are things like, your town shouldn't have monsters in it.
You're right.
He might be okay with that.
He wants there to be a cool message board in every town that he can see contracts in. The government should put up a message board and get out of the way so I can do my job.
He just doesn't like people who suck at their job.
That's true.
That's what it is. It's not just, like, being against bureaucracy. It's more like, I'm against people who clog up the system, who make things bad. Not that, like, the system is necessarily evil.
If you say that Geralt wants to drain the swamp, I'm kicking you off this podcast.
Look, Velen has some issues, you know?
But he needs those issues. In some ways, he is the career politician, right?
Job security... is the monsters that keep running in, right? That's his job security.
He needs the marriage to fall apart because one of them is secretly a werewolf. He needs that. Oh, I don't know. I don't think you're going to get there today. Let's all think about what Geralt might, where Geralt's heart
What would
might.
Geralt do?
What would Geralt
and if, you know, if people have other recommendations on what they think video game characters are doing out in the political spectrum, please tell us.
You let us know because we are listening. We are listening hard. I am Austin Walker. You can find me at twitter.com/AustinWalker. You can find everything that Waypoint does at waypoint.vice.com, at twitter.com/Waypoint. You can go to digitalpyramids.com. I just remembered something very important. Digitalpyramids.com. You can go to waypoint.zone. You can go to bazinga.zone. And someone hooked us the fuck up. Someone gave us the biggest gift this week. You know what? Fuck Donald Trump. Fuck the inauguration. There's one good thing in my heart today. You can go to new.donk.city.
Yes!
New.donk.city and find out everything we do at waypoint.vice.com. It's a redirect. Someone set up new.donk.city.
Say that 10 times fast.
New.donk.city. 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 I can do it. It's in my blood, Patrick.
Yeah, you can do it.
New.donk.city.
That's what you need. Can you please go back to that live stream and just... No more Donald Trump. No more, like,
no more
what we should do
politics
in the next 4 years. Like, just spit game about New Donk City.
Well, let me tell you about this. Let me tell you about another plumber. Mario. The first plumber. Mr. Mario. And the real New Donker. Where can people find you on the internet, Patrick and Danielle?
I guess they can still find me there. You can find me on Twitter at Patrick Klubik. You can find me on Facebook at Pete Klubik.
Danielle?
Awesome. I am at Danielle RI on Twitter and Danielle Riendo Writer on Facebook.
Awesome. Please stay tuned for us to come back on Monday, and we'll be out of our politics, explicit politics episodes, and back into just talking about what we've been playing and what's happening in the industry. But we will absolutely probably continue to bring all of this stuff up. I think I'm just going to toss all these politics buckets questions into the big bucket.
Yeah.
And then we'll hit them as we hit them.
Yeah, hopefully I should be. I need to look at the embargo, but hopefully I can talk about Resident Evil 7 on the podcast.
Oh, do you mean Resi 7? As our friends in the UK say,
stop it.
Resident 7.
Stop.
Patrick's giving me a look right now.
Stop. I know that's a thing. I know it's a thing.
It's a thing.
But it shouldn't be a thing.
You want to play a little Resi, and then afterwards we can play a little footy.
Now I'm turning my microphone off. I'm done.
As always,
this,
fine.
You know what? Today was a lot. That's my line.
That was too much.
Today of all days.
You found it.
This betrayal. You can find the music that you're about to hear at waypoint.zone/BOEN. Shout outs to Bowen, who is a fantastic electronic musician who lets us use his song Miss You off of the EP Pale Machine as our theme song. And shout-outs to Tim Barnes, who on today will cut this into a podcast for you to listen to. Shout-outs to Tim Barnes, TimBarnes451 on Twitter. I remembered it. I think that's going to do it for us. I want everybody to take some time this weekend, even if it's just an hour or two, and just, like, read a book or listen to an album you like. I said this the other day, but just, like, seriously, just do something that is not directly connected to games or to politics or to the world in this direct, key way. And, like, do something you wouldn't normally do, and let yourself have that. Until Monday, peace.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here, and it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. Hello Fresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. Hello Fresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.